your take on how blockchain will affect business planning in the future, given the decentralized nature of the blockchain?
I think that blockchain is going to revolutionize probably everywhere where people have transactions, where they have a mutual accountability or they're exchanging money. But the underlying technology, the blockchain technology, has got a very bright future and is going to be very, very big.
Welcome to the My Future Business Show with Rick Nusky, interviewing the biggest names in business to help you become successful. At the end of the call, get your free Better Business Builder Forum access where you can promote your business, access all of our premium content, and get live, private, one-on-one access to myself as you build your business. Go to myfuturebusiness.com/members. Today I'm with Peter Mayett of CustomBPS.com. How are you, Peter?
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it. It's nice to be on down in Australia. I love it.
Excellent, excellent. So we're also going to be talking a bit about your book later on, but for everybody who is listening to the call today, Peter's worked in many industries worldwide. He's a consultant. He's been involved with many different startups, launch teams, team leader positions, and so on and so forth. He's very experienced. His professional career has taken him into the space of business systems, business planning, and that's essentially what we're going to be talking about today, is the fundamentals behind business planning. Where would be a good start, Peter, for those who are not experienced in business planning? What is business planning, and how do they get involved?
Well, business planning to me is the first thing. I mean, there's a lot of places you can start. I mean, we'll talk about our book later, which is a really, really great start, because that's for people who have no clue what they want to do, and takes them through how to pick a business, how to figure it out. But I think the first thing that people have to understand is, before you can even plan, you've got to have a vision. Where is it that you're going? Mm-hmm. What's your destination? What does that look like? And spend time imagining it, visualizing it, seeing it in your mind like you're watching a motion picture. As many details as you can paint into that picture, as much as you can see in that vision, spend your time with it. I mean, we kind of have a philosophy and a culture going right now around, especially startups, about fail fast, fail forward, you know, minimum viable product, all this stuff. Let's not take any time to really think about it. Let's just throw things on the wall and see if they stick. And that's tremendously expensive financially, it's tremendously expensive intellectually, and it's tremendously expensive emotionally, because people can only take so much failure before they start to get disinterested or not want to do it, or it just tears at them. So the more time that you spend really visualizing it, if you think back about some of the great minds in this life, Nikola Tesla, Steve Jobs, these are people who sat down and really thought through what the end result was going to be before they even started. Mm. And so when you think about planning, I don't want people to think about, oh, I've got to sit down and write a bunch of documents, I've got to do this financial model, I've got to do all these things. Think about where it is that you want to go, because if you start with the end in mind, then it's a matter of breaking it down the steps backwards and figuring out all the steps back from where you want to go to where you are now. And then it's a matter of making the first step once you figured that out.
That's fantastic feedback. I often hear people who are frustrated with, you know, the notion of business planning for that very reason, is they think that it's going to be, a cascading of all these documents. And really, it's a lot simpler than that.
It's all about where you want to be. You will create what you need to create. Like, we have been blessed. We've been in business for 14 years now, and we have been blessed to work with some really amazingly bright entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And I told you when we first, before the call, I just got back from Zurich, Switzerland, where I spent time in Zug. I spent time in the crypto valley with a lot of people who are intensely bright, creative people. Mm-hmm. And these are people that you would think, oh yeah, they're you know, code kiddies, they're sitting there hacking away. No, they're sitting there thinking about, what does the world look like 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and how do all the things that we're doing in blockchain and cryptocurrency fit into the world 5 and 10 years from now? So, but they're not doing plans where they're sitting down and they're writing things out. They're doing plans in terms of what are the strategic places I want to be, and then what are the tactical moves I have to make to get there. So the people in life that really succeed, has been our experience, are the people that can concretely visualize where they want to go and then understand what the steps are that they need to take. Now, that doesn't mean you get away with not planning, because you've got to figure out how much money it's going to take you, what people you need to go with you, what your organization's got to look like, what your processes and systems have to be. You still have to figure all those things out. But if you know where you want to go, the excitement and the intellectual energy and emotional energy that's created by that destination will be enough to carry you over all the stuff that you need to do to be able to get there successfully.
So when we're looking at a business plan, given the context in which we've just discussed it, Peter, it seems to me that you could essentially get away with a one-page document to do this. Would that be fair to say?
What I would say to you is business plans, in fact, I go through this with clients all the time. Business plans are as long as they need to be. And so it depends on who the audience of the business plan is for. For example, if I'm trying to come up with a plan because I need to find somebody to be my ride-along CTO, and I need some coders, and I need somebody to watch my books, and I need to be able to tell the story to my team, my startup team, that could be... That could be a scribble on a piece of paper with a bunch of notes. It could be a picture of a whiteboard you did. That could be enough to get everybody grounded and started. Now, if I'm going to an institution and I'm trying to raise $20, $25 million, that document is going to be 150 pages, and it's going to detail exactly how the business is going to run, who the creditors are going to be, who the vendors are going to be, that kind of stuff. So it depends on the audience, but it can be in the beginning exactly what you say, as simple as one page, as long as it covers all the salient points in detailing correctly.
You talked about being around smart people a little earlier, and I'm looking at your about page, which is very impressive. Some of the businesses that you've worked with, the likes of BAE Systems, Panasonic, Verizon, you know, some of these huge names, DuPont, IBM, and the list goes on and on and on. And if we might, I'd like to talk about DuPont specifically, but swing around to that in a little bit. But first of all, you mentioned cryptocurrency, and I as a systems type of guy, I look at business planning, quality management, and this current surge of interest in cryptocurrency / blockchain. You know, it's very, very exciting in terms of the blockchain technology, I suspect more so than it is cryptocurrency itself. What's your take on how blockchain will affect business planning in the future, given the decentralized nature of the blockchain?
I think that blockchain is going to revolutionize probably everywhere where people have transactions, where they have a mutual accountability or they're exchanging money. Let me give you a really concrete example of this that was given to me by a gentleman named Willie Bremert, who runs a company that that does smart contracts that uses blockchains. Okay. You have, now these are not the actual banks. I'm picking these banks at random, but like you say, you have Citibank and you have Bank of America. And they program in certain languages and they store their data in certain databases, but they're dissimilar. And so everywhere that they meet, there are different problems with transactions. So I take money out of an ATM from Bank of America as a Citibank customer, or I do a transaction at Citibank that affects Bank of America. At some point, they've got to touch and they've got to reconcile. And so the record goes across from Citibank over to Bank of America, and then the batch of transactions come back from Bank of America to Citibank. Now, this is true. Now, this is not for Citibank, but it is for a bank, okay? One of the major banks in the United States, they've made the decision that if the batches are out by $25 or less, they're not going to contest them. If you go to their 10K filing, they have a $90 million transaction rounding cost, $90 million, because the systems are different. Now, what would blockchain do for that? If Bank of America and Citibank were on the same blockchain, they would have their information that only they could see, but all of their transactions where they touched would be on one thread. There wouldn't be two sets of books trying to reconcile. It would be one thread of information, so there wouldn't be any rounding error. So just in that one place, that would be $90 million that Citibank would be saving. $90 million.
That's just amazing. That's an industry in itself, isn't it?
Yeah. And so there are all kinds of things you can apply it to supply chain, right? For example, one of the people that is looking at this, and I know this for a fact, is Boeing. Because Boeing did CATIA in the 90s, which got all of their people onto one computer system to basically create all the parts for every single airframe they had to build. Well, blockchain would do that for the paperwork, because when you build an aircraft, every single piece and part on that aircraft has documented and tied to the tail number of that aircraft. So if you had blockchain, there would be no way for anybody to change a maintenance record, to forge a maintenance record, to change something. Once it was in the blockchain, it would be locked in. And so that's why that's so important, because if you take cryptocurrency and you look at Bitcoin, just went down $5,000 in like less than a week, and it could shoot up $20,000 in less than a week. I don't know if that has a future because of the volatility of it. But the underlying technology, the blockchain technology, has got a very bright future and is going to be very, very big. And so our company, one of the things that we've been doing is working with venture capitalists, with individual investors that are looking at getting into blockchain companies and helping them do the due diligence to either acquire them or invest in them.
That's an amazing space to get into, and it's something I'm very interested in. I recall back in the day working as a quality manager for international businesses, and I found that there are so many different processes that were essentially living in silos from place to place, and an audit trail, for example, would be fragmented, and it was as accurate as the guy who was filing it.
That's right. Exactly. So the blockchain gets rid of that, because then the blockchain says there are X number of transactions that happen. Both sides are going to agree on those number of transactions, and I can go to those transactions, and they're essentially creating an audit trail is built into the whole transaction flow. So now all of a sudden, one of the things too that makes banks excited about this is it gets sort of a whole bunch of back office people that are involved in things like audit. And so, yeah, it's a pretty bright future for that technology. And once people get, they've got to decouple the whole cryptocurrency from it and understand that it's a standalone, valid, revolutionary system of accounting and contracting. It's not just accounting, it's not just contracting, it's kind of pretty much a foundational way of doing business where we all agree on how we're going to do the contract, and it's all algorithmically programmed into the blockchain so that all of that stuff becomes the whole back end part of taking the contract, translating it into accounting is automatically done. And that's what smart contracts are about, and they were fascinating to learn about. That's something you could spend 2 or 3 hours talking about, and it's amazing.
Absolutely, and I'm quite excited, because if you consider the you know, 5-10 years down the track when blockchain has taken hold and we're all heavily invested in the technology, and then it creates a common global language for the way quality management occurs and accountancy occurs and reconciliation occurs, all the different elements inside of a typical quote-unquote business are consistent. They are the same, which is essentially what quality management back in the day was trying to do for so long, but it did not have this technology.
Well, yeah, and the thing about it, you could go all the way back to Deming. I mean, I spent time with Marshall Thurber, who was a man who worked with C. Everett Deming, and all of the quality circles, TQM, all the stuff that came out of that, and then all the things that we've tried to do. But they were because the thing is blockchain doesn't care about silos. You can silo a business up all you want. All it is about the transactions and the touch points. And as long as you know what the touch points are, it doesn't matter if you've got a thing that's balkanized into 75,000 departments or you have one flat organization that has no departments, it will function exactly the same. And where TQM and quality measures, quality circles and all that stuff had a really difficult time was you got the information handoff and the translations between different people using the same information different ways almost was like Schrodinger's cat, right? The fact that you looked at it changed it. And so this is immutable. The transaction's immutable. So now everybody's got the same set of data. A lot of excuses go away. you know, as a quality professional, some people are going to embrace that, and some people are going to say,
transparency, look out.
Yeah, oh my goodness, people are going to know what I'm doing, exactly, and so, yeah.
Well, look, it sort of it validates some people's existence and I guess nullifies others.
Well, that's the thing with all technology, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is the root and substance of all technology. And so there are some of us that are looking at the future and saying, this is freaking exciting. We're happy to be here. Look at how much good this could do. Mm-hmm. And there are other people saying, wait a minute, who's moving my cheese? I get this peanut butter sandwich every day at lunch. Why are you?
Who's moving my cheese? That's a funny little book. That one, I enjoyed reading that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, but it's true,
absolutely.
Right? I mean, it really is true. We're creatures of habit.
Mm. I can see as a business owner how in your business planning, if I was a client of yours, I could really embrace the blockchain technology. I suspect that this is becoming a very common element to your conversations, and I suspect the amount of inquiry about it would be going crazy right now.
Well, you'd think that, but it's surprising. It's not.
Wow.
And
okay.
let me tell you why. I think two things. One is it's not sufficiently differentiated from cryptocurrency. And so people see it all part and parcel of that, and that there's a tulip bulb gold rush hysteria,
in
my opinion, around cryptocurrency.
Absolutely.
And I think that I also think because it makes a direct attack at central banks at their core, that who knows if cryptocurrency in the form it is now is even going to exist in 5 or 10 years from now. It's interesting. I have a client who does instructional videos for law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And he's got this, you have to be in law enforcement to even be able to access his videos. And this is his business. His number one video is using cryptocurrency in dark or gray operations. That's his number one video. So cryptocurrency will keep existing because there are reasons why the government needs it to exist.
Mm-hmm.
But whether it exists in put your 401k in it or invest in it, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
That's number one. And then number two is blockchain is really simple to understand, but it's really hard to understand how you would apply it to certain business situations. And so the inquiries that we get are mainly around people who don't really understand blockchain or cryptocurrency, but say they have this don't want to get left behind thing. So they're saying, who do you know? How do I get in touch with these people in Crypto Valley? Are there any companies for sale? Or, you know, who are the technology companies? And the thing that you've got to understand about these crypto companies, too, is most of them are run by millennials. They're run by people under 35 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I met a guy who runs a company that does online ledgers, and he's doing several millions of dollars a year, and he's a crypto utopian that thinks that, hey, let's go to Africa where everybody's got a cell phone and there is no banking and put all the banking on the phone and not fight in Europe and not fight in the United States, but get it going in Africa and get it so big in Africa that it can't be shut down and that the central bank nations of the world will have to deal with it. And so they're not interested in selling their company to Wall Street. They're not interested in selling their company to a venture capitalist. They've got a very concrete idea of where they want the world to go. And that's what's so exciting about it,
yep,
is that they have this world vision that is so different than what the average world vision is. It's really cool.
And you and
cool
I
stuff.
And you and I have already touched on this need to have a vision early on. So that really fits that mold. And I guess you'd be sitting there, you know, beside yourself with excitement talking to these millennials because they have some really fresh ideas.
Well, it's not just beside yourself with excitement because they've got some really fresh ideas. It's that they're executing.
Yeah.
It's that they've got this vision and they're executing and they're talking to governments in Africa and they're doing, you know, we're talking about people coming out of Bosnia and Herzegovina, Kosovo. This is where all of this stuff is coming out of, the former East Bloc, and they're going around the world doing this crypto evangel. So when they look at cryptocurrency, they're not looking at it the way that people look at Bitcoin, which is kind of like a casino right now. They're looking at it like, you know what, here's people that they can't get ahead in their lives because they have no way to save money because there are no banks.
Yeah.
And so it's really very noble. It's very utopian. And, you know, I support it, even though I'm kind of an old fart. I get it.
Yeah.
And I think that it's something that I want to support, because I think that it could really change and make people's lives really positive. And so to see people with that kind of motivation who could take that same thing and sell it out to somebody in Wall Street and make a ton of money, a wheelbarrow full of money, mm-hmm. turn that money down and say, no, I have this other vision, is just beyond exciting to me.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing your insights. I appreciate it. This list of businesses that you've worked with and created business systems for is long and illustrious, I must say. I really want to focus in on DuPont and your experience with them, and talk about them as pioneers in the systems space and how they go about planning, and what sort of involvement that you had with them.
Okay, so my involvement with them was implementing a Bond ERP system in a division of DuPont. Mm-hmm. And what I got to work with, if you want to talk about planning, everything that happens with DuPont has to go through a change review process. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, we're going to take out their old, it was like a, God, what is the name of that? Mapix. We're going to take this old Mapix system out of this division. We're going to take Bond, which is long gone. I don't know if you remember them. Mm-hmm. But Bond were competitors of SAP and Oracle and PeopleSoft. And we're going to take this Bond system. We're going to replace this Mapix system at one of their divisions. So the first thing that we had to do was we had to work with them to understand what the impacts were at all the touch points of their system. Like, for example, when you went to log into a system at DuPont, you had your username, you had your password, and then you had a biscuit card that had a code that changed every 30 seconds. So you had to put in your name, your password, and that code. And by the way, I don't know why, but the pressure of putting six numbers in under 30 seconds, I feel like I'm in some movie where I'm launching missiles or something. Is it the green wire? Is it the blue wire? It's like, I don't know.
Yeah, I've experienced this.
Yeah, so everything about them, because everything on their network, all of their stuff's on one network. They've got a unified network. So all their proprietary information, their trade secrets, mm-hmm. their formularies for the different things they do for paint, for chemicals, for petrochemicals, all of that stuff is on one network. So if you can get into their network and you can navigate through all the different walls they put up, you can get to anything that DuPont has. Mm. But they are beyond government level security. Mm. And so everything that they do, they plan. So the first thing we do is, how is the system going to impact them? What are the things it's going to touch? What are the things that it's going to integrate with? And so then that's fine. Okay, then we figure that out. Okay, so now once that's done, we figure out what the security issues are, then is, how are the people that are working with the system, how are their jobs going to change? What are the things that they're going to do, and what are the things that they're not going to do? So you do a gap analysis. So you say, okay, here's what they're doing now. Here's the things the system's going to replace for them. So it was a net reduction in steps. Okay, so because it's a net reduction in steps, then what are the things that get eliminated? And then you figure out what the training is going to be required to actually roll that out. Mm-hmm. And so, which is so nice to work with an educated client, because most clients that do these kinds of implementations don't take the time to do this kind of planning. No. I have a client right now that is a literal nightmare with an SAP implementation, because they did no planning about how to roll it out to the users. Mm-hmm. Okay, so once you figure out the net differences, you do the gap analysis, you figure out what the training is going to be, then you actually build out a plan, and the plan's got to address that. And the thing that I also loved about working with them as a client was they would say, is that enough time? When's the last time you ever heard that? Is that enough time? Do you think that's enough time?
That's exceptions, not the rule, that's for sure and certain.
Yeah, exactly. Do you think that's enough time? Do you think that 2 weeks to do that's enough time? Because the thing that the guy that ran the division used to say to me was, I'd rather have it right than quick.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I'm going to spend the time fixing it if it's wrong. So I'd rather have it right than quick. And so they would ask you those questions, and they were a very, very, very enlightened client. I also worked with JP Morgan. They were the same way. It was kind of like, I don't care about this deadline stuff as much as I care about, I don't want you guys to roll up your mat and go home and find out there are 15 things that my IT guys that are left behind have to fix. Mm-hmm. And so that whole planning process and the fact that we were integrated, we had to do red, yellow, green meetings with them every week. We had to do a monthly meeting with them every month to go through and just look at, are we on plan? Are we not on plan? And it was not one of these things where it was finger pointing or people threatening you. It was more like, this feels not green, it feels more yellow. And let me explain to you why I think it's yellow. And here's the mitigations we should do to tighten that up. And so the whole thing kind of proceeded along that line to where when it was time to throw the switch, we had trained the users, we had satisfied all the requirements, we had made sure that the system was going to work. By the way, we also did a conference room pilot before we ever put any code down to show people how it would work. Then we did training on a sandbox system. So when they finally cut over, it was like the people who actually received the training were kind of like, oh, thank God, the training's over. We're actually going to get to do something now.
Yeah,
you know, we actually bored them into submission. It was really kind of good.
I hear elements of project management through your meetings and the ongoing review, revision, and corrective actions, all this type of stuff. And I also hear the fundamentals of a quality management system, and it's very, very exciting. It's something that is the backbone of good businesses. I'd love to swing around now, if we could, Peter, on to your book, The Killer Business Plan. Tell us about that.
Okay, so what happened was in 2008, courtesy of Goldman Sachs and Wall Street, our phone stopped ringing because nobody had any money. Mm-hmm. And it was an exciting and scary time. Mm-hmm. And we said, you know what, we've been in business for 4 years, 5 years now. What have we learned? And what have we learned about people who want to get in business? Because we really have three clients. We have people who are starting business. They're either escaping their cubicle job, or they never had a job. They just want to go right into business. So they're starting up, but they're not really clear on what they want to do. Then we have people who are already in business, but they want to expand and want to get bigger and they want to tighten up. Mm-hmm. And then we have a third client who's venture capital, private equity, family office, who are looking for extra hands in a due diligence or somebody to write a business plan for something or a confidential memorandum for a company they want to buy or a company they want to sell. So those are our three clients. Mm-hmm. The book is really oriented toward the first two. So in other words, my wife said to me, she goes, you know, because she works in the business with me and she's not the typical, oh, my wife keeps the books and I do the work. She is probably, I know she's a better project manager than I am because I've seen her in action. Mm-hmm. And she's as capable at this as what we do as I am. So she said to me, she goes, I always wanted to be in my own business, but I couldn't figure out what business that was. Mm. So we wrote this book. It's three parts. The first part is, how to figure out a business when you know you want to be an entrepreneur, you know you want to be on your own, but you just can't quite grasp what is it that I really want to do. So that first section helps you sort that out by just really asking you a bunch of questions, because it really boils down to you're going to be successful at things that fit into your temperament. You can't go against who you are or who you become and be successful. But at the same time, most people that start businesses, they don't think that way, especially if they buy franchises. They get forced into a box and they're not happy. So you've got to be happy with your life or you're not going to succeed. So the first section is, how do I choose a business? The second section is, how do I figure out, before I get all into it and write a full business plan and, you know, make commitments and get a lease and start things like that, how do I figure out if it's going to make money? And we have a way that you can look at almost any business and in the space of 3 to 5 minutes, figure out if it's going to make enough money to support itself and to support your lifestyle. So that's the second section of the book. And that's really important because if you've gone through the first two sections of the book and you still want to do a business, then you're probably got the right stuff. Mm. And if you get to go through the first two sections of the book and you go, God, this just seems like a bunch of air to me, then you're probably not the right person to do this. Mm-hmm. Then the third section is how to write a business plan that you would take to a bank. Yep. Because most of the people that come to us to get business plans are being funded by a bank or they're being funded by some institution like a bank. So we go into detail section by section, and the book is a hybrid in that there's an online component where we have models, we have videos that help you out, we have examples of stuff. So there's a whole resource thing that's online that you can go pull these resources off to use, and it tracks with the book. So if you go through the book, it'll say, go get this piece, you will get this piece. Like, especially the thing that really, really turns a lot of people off and has been the foundation of us getting a lot of business is people don't like to do financial modeling. They don't want to learn what cost of goods are. They don't want to figure out their expenses. So we take them through it, and we take them line by line through this financial model and explain exactly what it is and why you need to understand it. And so it's funny, we just hired a new person at our office, and she's 19 years old. She's very young. And what I did was, when I advertised for the position, I said, I'm not looking for any. All I'm looking for is attitude and intelligence. I don't care about your experience or education. So write me a 2-paragraph thing about what this would mean for you if you would get hired here. And Jennifer wrote, I want to start my own business. I want to be my own boss. And I want to learn the skills to be able to do that. And you guys seem like the best possible place I could do that. And I hired her, and she's reading our book. And it's really funny because it's all, she's only been with us for like a couple of months, and the book's all dog-eared. She comes in with questions. She's already working on her business plan because she's thinking the way that she needs to think.
She's strategic.
Yeah. So the whole book is really about, if I had to say it, the first two parts is kind of like, let's figure out how you think. And then the last part is, here's how you would put that down on paper so you could go do something with what you think.
Where can our audience find your book?
It's on Amazon. You can pick it up. There's a Kindle version and a regular book version. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, too, if there's a way to do it, I want to offer the book, an electronic copy of the book, to your listeners for free. I'll give them the book.
That would be great. Peter, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. You talk about the same things that I'm passionate about. We've touched on blockchain, which is a huge thing right now. We've talked about your business. We've talked about some of the amazing experiences you've had. And thank you very much for being on the show with us today.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure having you on the call with us today. Now click on that big red subscribe button and join us inside the Better Business Builder Forum at myfuturebusiness.com/members.